Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We have an informative show lined up for you. We have a couple, multiple return guests, Steve Ward from the Mothman Museum and MC of the Mothman Festival and host of the High Strangeness Factor podcast is here. Brian Seach. Someone has their radio on or computer getting some feedback. Anyhow, Brian Seach has been a college professor, written for newspapers, is an outstanding paranormal cryptid researcher and lecturer, and Dan Hageman is the producer of the Butler, Pennsylvania Organization for Research of the Unexplained, and they will be having a conference on April 27th in Lindora, Pennsylvania. It's a great event, quality speakers and venues, and you can find out more about Dan and Boru at Boru, BORU-UFO.com. Hi guys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Going great.
Good.
Still don't know where the echo is coming from.
Yeah, I hear it too. I don't know. And I'm hearing myself talk back to me.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything other than, you know, the speaking.
I think it might be.
Yeah, I'm not hearing the. I'm not hearing the feedback now.
It's the aliens.
Always the aliens.
Dorms.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I can't, other than when somebody speaks, that's the only thing I hear.
Yeah, it's not echoing with Dan.
Okay. Yeah, I don't believe it's me either. It might be you, Mark. I don't. I can.
Yeah, I hear an echo with Brian and with me, but not Dan. Explain that one.
Okay. Let's try. Let me try something here. I'm gonna do this quickly. Not seeing anything on Great. Okay, Dan, let's kind of move forward and get a little background on the objective of the Boru conference.
As far as the conference, we actually had our first conference back in 2008. We're coming up 2024. It'll be our 17th year. Back in when COVID hit, we had to cancel our conference for that that year, which would have been the I believe the 15th year, but you know, we still counted even though we canceled it, because we've actually been at it for 17 years. Basically, I get into it because I believe in the reality of UFOs, aliens, Bigfoot, Dogman, or ghosts, whichever you prefer. There's more to it than what people realize. And the sad thing is we've been brainwashed all our lives. We've been lied to. And the main reason why I do it is because I feel the public has a right to know. And, you know, I just want to bring the information to the public. Everybody has a mind. They can think for themselves or think how they like. But I've had people that have come to the conferences, absolutely non-believers, and I've said, well, just keep an open mind. Now, obviously, you're interested or you would not be here. And eventually they come around and say, you've turned us into a true believer.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of interest out there. The Butler Paranormal Conference is the biggest and the longest running conference of its type, I believe, in the tri-state area. And as a result of what we do, it's almost every weekend now there's something going on somewhere that's within a reasonable travel distance. If it's a Bigfoot conference or a Dogman conference or a UFO conference, so a lot of people have patterned their conferences after what we do, and, you know, we're kind of proud of that.
I think you have a great conference. Who are this year's speakers?
We have Brian and Terry Seach. We have Steve Ward. We have
that's worth going to just for those three.
Heather Mosier, Denny Vigolo. Denny actually spoke last year, but he just published a book, and having all kind of issues with that. It's very interesting. Even the publisher that's working on trying to get the book finished, her computer system has repeatedly gone down whenever she goes to work on or try to print his book.
I've heard of that.
She's had to have computer experts come in, and the experts have said, excuse the French, what the hell is going on here? We have never, ever seen anything like this before. She even had a printer that something happened to it in the process of printing out this book, to the point to where couldn't get it repaired. She had to totally replace it. And, you know, it's just someone or something is trying to prevent this book from being printed. And then, you know, it's very interesting. It has to deal with the Kinzu Dam area, Strange Kinzu. And then we also have Michael Rinaldi. And it's going to be not only a fun-filled day, but there is going to be a ton of information, and hopefully we'll have a packed house.
I hope so. When We look at the setting of where you put on the conference. What is the historical background to Lindora and UFOs?
Lindora is right smack dab in Butler, PA. I call it Butler, PA. It's right there. If you've ever been to the conference, you're in Butler, and then the next thing you're at the hall. The little area or community is called Lindora, PA. But Butler as a whole, historically, has had a really, really high amount of unidentified sightings. And back in the day, there was a rail car manufacturer in Lindora that was called Pullman Standard. And, we had dozens and dozens of UFO sightings reported over top of that plant. And, all along Newcastle Road, which is right there by Lindora. But, we actually had an incident where the state police, the township police, the city police, they cordoned off an intersection, Newcastle Road and Duffy Road. And they had a UFO sighting. It hovered motionless. They were looking at it through binoculars and spotter scopes and rifle scopes. And this thing actually, the sequence repeated itself three consecutive nights. And they never came up with a conclusive answer as to what it was. But historically, Butler County is just a hotbed of UFO sightings and remains that today.
Okay, and Dan, in April of 1897, there were the number of airship sightings over Lindora. Was that similar to the 1897 airship sightings that Keel documents in Sistersville?
Absolutely, almost identical. Almost identical. The descriptions that people gave of the craft that they witnessed, it was just like a repeat of what they saw. Very, very similar.
Well, were the Sistersville sightings first or Lindora first?
I believe the Sistersville sighting happened first.
Okay, so they're kind of moving northeast. Barbara had, in her book, they cover something similar to that.
Yeah, there's a corridor that we have a lot of sightings in and around and throughout Butler County. Lindora, Hanson Avenue, that's a very heavily traveled corridor for unidentified craft. That'll take you down Route 8 going toward Pittsburgh, but, we had an incident where unidentified craft come down through Lindora, went down out over Route 8 and out over the Butler County Community College, and totally wiped out all their systems, massive power outage all throughout the area. It wiped out their phone systems. Now, their phone system, they had a backup and a backup and a backup, very, very extensive system. And it totally wiped out everything, wiped out all the battery banks to where everything had to be completely replaced. And, no explanation other than it was an unidentified aerial sighting.
All right. S- since I just mentioned Keel's documentation of the Sistersville airships, Steve, was there any kind of Mothman Museum celebration for John Keel's 94th birthday?
No, just a lot of people posted birthday wishes on Facebook and acknowledged what a great researcher he was and how far ahead of time he was for everybody. But there's no special celebration.
Well, you have a lot of his papers and his jacket at the museum. I just wondered if there was some kind of big public acknowledgement.
No, we have a really nice display at the museum, and Keel's featured prominently there. We even have Keel's white suit in a display case, so it doesn't get any better than that.
Okay. All right, Brian, let's bring you in. You are covering the northern part of the state with, you know, cryptids, UFOs. Steve's covering the southern part of the state. Dan is east of the area. Brian, what are you hearing about UFOs and, you know, how that would fit in with your presentation next month?
Well, our Terry and I's presentation next month is going to be a totally new presentation. It is called Our Weird World, and it is kind of a compilation of weird occurrences across the world, cryptids, UFOs, and ghosts. And it is done in a comical manner. It is, there's a lot of wordplay in it. There's a lot of pop culture. It's a very different presentation than what people are used to hearing from us. So I think the people enjoy it.
Okay. Yeah, this echo is still going on with Brian and Steve speaking. So I'm just wondering if the severe storms coming from the Gulf Coast yesterday had some kind of impact. I have everything turned off, and I think you guys do too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have to soldier on. Dan, how did you get involved in all this ufology and weird stuff?
Well, my interest, my whole family has had multiple sightings throughout its lifetime. Mine started at the age of 5 years of age, and my whole family witnessed it. We saw a couple craft. You know, it was probably about a year later, had another sighting. Place that we lived at, there had been a bad storm, and of course the storm had come and gone, but the sky, you know, just big billowy clouds, and it was toward evening. And you could see these things, you know, sweeping, zigzagging through the clouds. You know, first there was one, then there were two, then there was one, then there were three. And this went on for about a good half hour, 45 minutes. Every time they would come through, no sound. Definitely wasn't an airplane. You know, both of those incidents, within a couple of days, there were write-ups in the local paper, people reporting UFO sightings. Then when Betty and Barney Hill, when that incident happened, the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, I was so obsessed with that. You know, I had the magazine that the article broke in. I still have that today. read the article and reread it and read it and reread it and over and over again. again, a few more years, we've had, you know, other sightings, and then back in 1982, probably the most significant sighting I've had in my lifetime. Witnessed their triangular-shaped craft. The thing stopped and hovered directly above us. We're looking straight up at it. And you know, there were three lights on the bottom, one on each corner. And the best way to describe it is it looked like a pole, shaped like a pole ball. And between the point light and the back two lights, there were crescent-shaped openings that finally opened up into full circles, and two metallic spheres dropped down out, bobbed up and down simultaneously till those openings closed. Looking at the one on the right, it started to spin, and sparks started flying out of the center of it, and I turned to look at the one on the left, and in the blink of an eye, one shot north, one shot south. The lights on the bottom of the triangle just erratically pulsated. They didn't blink like navigation lights. Again, there was absolutely no sound. It did a sharp zigzag to the left, sharp zigzag to the right, and in the blink of an eye shot straight up till it was gone from sight. Several miles away from that location where we had the sighting, there were several people that witnessed just the reversal of what I just told you. They saw these spheres come in like they were chasing each other around, and then all of a sudden became stationary, bobbed up and down slowly, and this triangle appeared out of nowhere. The bottom opened up. They slowly went up inside the triangle, and when the openings closed, the thing shot off in the blink of an eye and was gone. Definitely not anything that that we have that I'm aware of.
Okay, Steve, if we look at some of Dan's information, the triangular-shaped crafts, some of the lights, do we see a pattern with the Flatwoods Monster case or what Keel saw in the Point Pleasant area where he was doing the Morse code with Mary Heyer in the car? Is what Dan reported consistent with some of the other accounts?
It seems like some of the triangular-shaped objects have been a little more recent, although, you know, nothing is definite. I mean, you can go back in time and find some pretty early sightings of triangular objects. When Keel was watching the skies and people in the Point Pleasant area in the Ohio Valley in the middle 60s, they were seeing mostly strange lights. They didn't always see the shape of a craft. A man named Ted Phillips, who was a colleague of Dr. Hynek. Ted Phillips had done, he's no longer with us, but he did literally thousands of trace landing cases, close encounters of the second kind, where a craft or light or whatever has left some kind of evidence, some kind of debris or landing marks or burn marks or whatever. And he said that it seems like the general sighting of UFOs has changed over the years. Back in the 50s, 60s, we saw a lot of disc-shaped objects that seemed to be metallic. And as time went on, he discovered a place called, he calls it Marley Woods, which is in southeastern Missouri. And it's just a really high active area, but he said most of the things that people are seeing there are lights, blobs of light, and sometimes they separate, sometimes they come together. So there, you know, nothing ever seems to go away, but there seems to be kind of a change in the general sightings, the way people report these things. So you know, who knows what is really going on.
Okay, Brian, do you see something similar to the evolution of different types of crafts in just 30 miles upriver from me? What are people reporting to you?
More, we're hearing more about lights, light spheres, as we call them. And, you know, there are these, they have talked about seeing tic-tac-shaped objects. The U.S. Air Force has been talking about those. And now they call them UAPs. That's the new catchphrase, UAPs instead of UFOs. So you're still hearing some saucer shapes, obviously, but a lot more are cylindricals, and then some are more like we call them light spheres, actually.
Okay, and how about the reports coming into esteemed researchers like Fred Saluga? Is he getting about the same things as you are, since he's, you know, he's like halfway between you and me and Dan?
Yeah, Fred still gets, he gets reports also from PA also, and he's still getting craft shape and some lights also. So he's getting multiple forms of sightings still, because he's still in MUFON. He's the state director of West Virginia, and he still takes cases in PA also.
The tic-tac shape is kind of an interesting story. One of our regular guests, Wallace Wagner, had his sighting, and that craft was the tic-tac shape, and you know, changed his life, caused him to reevaluate all that he had been taught, learned up to that time. Barbara's a contributing author to his second book, Within Grasp, but all that is based on a tic-tac sighting. So it seems like it's part of this evolution from the saucer to these new triangular shapes, tic-tac shapes, other cylindrical types of crafts. So just wondering if anyone had a comment on the types of crafts out there.
Well, it seems if we were talking about John Keel, that's one of the reasons that he came up with the idea of window areas. He talked about those the first time in Strange Creatures from Time and Space. And it seemed like some of these things just sort of popped in and out of nowhere and then disappeared. They didn't seem to necessarily be coming from off the Earth. And when you catalog the sightings of what people are seeing, the variety is astounding. You almost never get a craft that is exactly the same shape. Well, you'll get, you know, general categories like discs, cigars, and spheres and so forth, triangles.
Right.
You just don't very often get the same type of craft. So it suggested to him that something else might be going on with at least some of these sightings. He thought they were he got into the idea that some of these things might be manifestations and are kind of reflective of our expectations and so forth and our consciousness at the time. Now, that certainly can't explain all of them, but it's always been a mystery as to, even when we talk about the entities and so forth, there is There are so many different varieties. Now, it's possible that we're a Grand Central Station for all kinds of visitors from everywhere, but it'd be hundreds and hundreds of different groups coming here to be able to understand the all the different types of reports we have.
Okay. When was Keel documenting the different types of crafts?
Well, he talked about in Strange Creatures from Time and Space, which has become the complete guide to mysterious beings, and then especially in Operation Trojan Horse, where that came out in 1970, and that's when he was pulling together cryptids, UFOs, psychic phenomena, seeing patterns in all of them, and that where there seemed to be some connection. And so that's where he was talking about, you know, trying to come to grips with why there are so many different varieties.
Okay, so we're going back almost 55 years of some tic-tac appearances. It's not just a recent type of shape of craft that is being reported. It's been around for a while. Okay, I did not know that. Let's see, what else can we get? Steve has Mark Randall still doing some artwork?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's he posts a lot of stuff on Facebook, and yeah, he's done some great work.
Okay, I just wanted to plug his work. I'm really impressed with his vision of these creatures.
Well, we did a book together called Mothman High Strangeness, which is available in the Mothman Museum, and it covers the year of the Garuda, the year of the Mothman, all, you know, 66 to 67, and he has illustrations covering, you know, everything, John Keel, the Men in Black, the Silver Bridge Collapse, the Mothman, and he and I wrote the pieces for the illustrations. Of course, he did all the illustrations.
He's a unique artist. I really like what he's done.
Yeah, he's captured some of these cryptids just magnificently.
He has. Okay. I just wanted to give a shout out to Mark as well. Dan, with Lindora, Butler County, being in western Pennsylvania, do the rivers, the proximity to Lake Erie, have any kind of connection with the UFOs or USOs?
I believe they do. Absolutely, 100%. Excuse me. We've had multiple reports of, you know, unidentified objects, whether that be UFO or USO, throughout all the Great Lakes. We have the Three Rivers down in Pittsburgh. We have the river over in Katanning, Allegheny River, and just dozens and dozens of reports all the time about craft being seen coming up out of the water, flying, you know, or traveling along the way the river flows. So I definitely believe there's, 100% that they utilize that for their means of travel.
Okay, and Steve, with the Lake and Ray Museum down the street from you. They do a thorough job of explaining all the rivers, hydrodynamics.
The River Museum.
Yes.
And they've got an amazing setup there. They've got ship models, and they're going to restore the in the old one, the burned down. You're able to actually pilot a tugboat down the river. And you don't want me driving one of those because I almost drove up onto Main Street in one of those things.
Okay, but you know, James does manage the really nice museum. Does he have any insights into USOs in the Point Pleasant area?
I haven't actually spoken to him at length. I saw him speak last year at the Mothman Festival, but that's he was talking about the River Museum and restoring it and so forth. But I don't know any. I don't know personally his insights into those subjects.
Okay, I spoke to him at the festival last year, and he covered some of the mastodons found in Putnam County along the Kanawha River. I mean, you get some of the fossil trees that were found. I found the discussion with him to be very captivating about all the prehistory in the valley, or both valleys. So I'm just wondering if there's any similarities 3 to 4 hours south of Dan.
I'm not up to date on anything that's going on now. In fact, I haven't heard any reports, even talking to people at the museum and so forth. So it doesn't necessarily mean things aren't happening, but I'm not getting any recent reports on what UFOs and what might actually be seen or manifesting in the area.
Okay. Brian, how about the mountains? Even though we're located between two major cities, Pittsburgh and Columbus, there's still a lot of mountains, farms. Is there enough space to sustain a family of a lot of Bigfoots or some of the other cryptids?
Well, the thing you know, Mark, is this is a very difficult state to research.
Especially for Tell me about it.
They don't call it the mountain state for anything, right? You know, you have some hollers, a little bit of flatland, and then you've got mountains. So, yes, I do believe that there's a lot of caves, especially here in Hancock County. Caves, underground mines. Actually, Hancock County is almost one huge underground mine. Possibly maybe some of these creatures could live in some of the mines, some of the caves, some of the inaccessible, you can access some of these areas, but they're going to be difficult. So, yeah, I do believe that, although the people down here, as you know, Mark, they don't really like to talk about it a lot. We've been down here, it'll be 3 years in August, and we are making some headway. Some people are starting to talk to us. We've got a couple of winged entity sightings down here.
Some Bigfoot sightings. Believe it or
yeah,
not,
the black
panther
cats.
Sightings.
Yeah,
black
the
cats.
Yeah,
and once we're here longer and, you know, do more events and we're able to get out to the public more, we do believe that people will start talking to us more. So it's an exciting time down here. Now, we also have an event coming up that we're co-sponsoring with Fred Saluga. It's the Northern West Virginia Panhandle Paranormal Conference on May 4th. That will be at Brook Hills Park at the Brook Hills Playhouse. And it'll be a free event for the public. It's going to be five speakers. There'll be vendors. There should be some food there sold. So it's going to be Fred and I are going to speak. Let me get the poster here, which was done by Mark Randall. Another shout-out to Mark. He did a couple of these posters for us, too. Our friend Aurora Swinhealthy, she's going to talk about spirit communications. Michael Cook is going to talk about Bigfoot. John Ventry will talk about UFOs and Native Americans. And Robert Solomon will talk about giants. So we've got all kind of different subjects here down in the panhandle. So we hope on May 4th at the Brook Hills Playhouse from 10 to 6, we get a bunch of you guys coming down.
That sounds like a nice conference.
Yep.
Okay. Dan. Lindora is, probably an hour drive from Kecksburg?
Yeah, that's a fair estimate. I think... I've gone over to Kecksburg multiple times for the Kecksburg Festival, mm-hmm. and I think from my front door to where that event is held, it takes me about 48 minutes.
Okay. Is there a reason why the Kecksburg craft crashed? Okay, we get the sightings in 60-some years earlier. You know, the Braxy case is a little bit before Kecksburg. Why do we have all these sightings going in a straight line, you know, across western Pennsylvania through West Virginia?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the natural ley lines of, on the Earth. There's a lot of speculation that these craft follow the ley lines, for propulsion reasons. But that's a question that I don't really think anyone has really answered. It's a very good question, but... that's one that your guess is as good as mine. But I really think it has to do a lot with the natural ley lines of the Earth.
You know, it may well. I just started reading an old book by Amy Michelle called Flying Saucers and the Straight Line Mystery. I've just gotten into it. He was a colleague of Jacques Vallée, and he saw patterns in Europe of this sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what he said back in the 50s. But I don't really have that information yet.
Well, we know the many of the stone circles and megalithic structures were built on ley lines. And I think we'll have Maria Wheatley coming up soon, next month, and she argues that case too, that the megalithic sites were built on ley lines. Is there a spiritual connection that the ETs were following? I've just wondered about that as well. I'm interested in getting your perspective, Steve, on the book you're reading. Was there a point to the west where some of these crafts were headed before they crashed, or they crashed before they reached their destination? I think it's something that needs further investigation. I'm really intrigued by what you were saying about the ley lines. And Keel mentioned them too in the Mothman prophecies.
He talked about the various mounds and stone monuments and so forth.
And he wondered what came first, the strange lights in the sky, and did they build the mounds afterwards, or did somehow the mounds and the focus of thought create the lights in the sky?
Probably the other way around. But Keel, actually, by the end of the 60s, had become kind of jaded, and he kind of rejected the extraterrestrial hypothesis. But in later years, he backtracked a little bit. He did not believe that there was just one answer to the UFO mysteries.
No, it's a fascinating subject. I'm really glad you brought that up. What was the name of the book again, Steve?
I'm sorry?
What was the name of that book?
Trojan Horse, Operation Trojan Horse?
No, Michelle.
Oh, I'm sorry, Amy Michelle. He also wrote The Truth Behind Flying Saucers. Years ago, but this is called Flying Saucers and the Straight Line Mystery. And unfortunately, I'm going to call them third-party pirates, have them in their hands, and it'll cost you a ton of money to get them off eBay or Amazon.
All right. Dan, if you're coming up 79 South to attend the conference. People will be getting off the interstate pretty close to Evans City. Brian had made some posts about that recently. And you can also stop in to see where the opening of Night of the Living Dead was filmed.
Yeah, so you have a lot of stuff to see. Museum there in Evans City. You can come that way. Also, you could take 79 to 422 East. Follow 422 East, get off the Lindora exit. Now, that's actually Newcastle Road. When you get off there, you'll come to an intersection. There'll be a shopping plaza. It's Moraine Point Plaza that's in front of you. You'd make a left at that light, follow Newcastle Road all the way out. Eventually, you'll drop down over a hill. You'll pass the Butler High School. Butler High School is on your right. Pennsylvania State Police Barracks on the left. You'll drop down over that hill, and halfway down that hill is a traffic light. You'll stay in the right lane. You'll bear to the right, and that'll put you on Hanson Avenue. And the Tanglewood Senior Center, once you bear to the right, you'll come to a traffic light. And at that traffic light on Hanson Avenue, you go through the light. There's a Speedway gas station right there on the corner.
Uh-huh.
Right past that Speedway gas station, you make a right, and that'll take you up into the parking lot of the Tanglewood Senior Center.
Cool. Okay.
You know, Mark, it's appropriate at my age now that we're going to be in a senior center.
Yeah, we're all getting there.
Yeah, don't get old.
Okay, I have a question, Steve, this might be better for you since you are, you know, right there at the epicenter of the Silver Bridge collapse. But in today's news, or all over the place, there's the ship crashing into the Francis Scott Key Bridge. What's being reported on the from the eyewitnesses with the crash of all the metal coming down, smashing onto the ship? Would that have been similar to the Silver Bridge collapse? You know, I understand the causes are different, but would the sounds have been similar?
I would imagine it was the collapse of the Silver Bridge was thunderous. Jeff Lonsley, who runs the Mothman Museum, was 6 years old when all this happened. He was in his basement several miles away, and he heard the crash. So, you know, it's one of these things that but it should be pointed out that these are both tragedies, but I've had people ask me about the Mothman connection or whatever, and there really is none. There's no connection between the Maryland bridge collapse and the Silver Bridge collapse. I talked to a survivor of the bridge collapse that was driving a semi across. It went down in 30 to 40 seconds, but it had to do with the 13th eye bar that determined later on was faulty. So, and I don't believe that the Mothman had anything to do with the bridge. I don't even think he was a portent of doom, you know, a harbinger. So I just think that these things all happened at the same time. And I'm very, very aware and conscious of the Silver Bridge. I literally live a few streets away from where the bridge used to go span over to Ohio. And I can walk down to see the bridge memorial. There's a mural on the flood wall of the way the bridge used to look. There is a memorial and the 46 names of the people that died embedded on the sidewalk. So, and the one in Maryland, apparently, I don't know the circumstances or why it happened, but the ship apparently hit the structure and it went down probably as quickly as the Silver Bridge did.
I wasn't trying to make light of either tragedy.
Oh,
I was just wondering, with a couple of the eyewitnesses on today's news, you know, they live, you know, closer to the inner harbor, and they were awoken at, you know, 1:30 in the morning. Yeah, that's actually a huge space, and you know, you can hear how loud it must have been. And you said Jeff was in his basement a couple miles away, and he heard it.
Wow.
It's just really one of those things where you would never forget the sound, you know, which, you know, kind of takes us into Jackie and Bill's, you know, Bridging the Tragedy book.
But, I was looking at some of the video clips that are circulating the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They have one that is apparently a camera that overlooks the harbor and looks at the bridge. And when they play that footage, you can look at it. I think Facebook, it's on YouTube, I know that. But you see that ship coming in, and it hits the bridge stanchion on the left. Now, to the right of that is the center portion of the bridge where the arc is in the bridge. Then
right.
Far right, you have another stanchion. And they zoomed in on that. They show it in slow motion as the bridge is coming down. And you see what looks like a couple explosions above that stanchion on the bridge frame. And you can see what looks like molten steel, you know, falling down toward the water. Now, I'm not saying that the bridge was blown up deliberately, but, you know, when you look at that, it was definitely some kind of explosion or explosions. And I watched it, and I watched it, and I rewatched it, and I'm actually, you know, just blown away. But I think there's more to it than what we're being told.
Okay, I was just... trying to develop a sense of the sounds that people may have heard during the Silver Bridge collapse. It's a nice opportunity to make a comparison between the visuals and audio. Audio types of after effects. I was really captivated. Dan, I'll have to look for the video that you're talking about.
I have to agree with Steve, though. I don't think, you know, no comparison or correlation between the two. Absolutely none whatsoever, but you know, if you guys check out that video, and you got to watch it close. I mean, if you don't watch it close, you're going to miss it. But, you know, when they show the bridge to where you can see that far right stanchion that the bridge is sitting on, just to the left of that, where the bridge frame is, you watch that real close, and, you know, you'll see plumes of smoke, and then followed by those plumes of smoke, you'll see what looks like, you know, flashes of molten metal falling down toward the water.
Okay. I'll do that after the show. Let's see. Do you want to go a couple more minutes and, you know, wrap up the show? Because this echo is... not going away.
Sure, well, however you want to work it, Mark.
Okay, it's just annoying, and that has, you know, I think this is going back to, like, the network, not Barbara's house, the, like, main station. This is very difficult to deal with the echoing.
I have to say, Mark, you know, ironically, from my viewpoint, everybody, including you, is echoing except Dan. Now, I want to know, maybe Dan's wearing aluminum foil or something like that.
I actually left my tin foil hat out in the truck.
Well, that can't explain it then.
Okay.
As far as on my end, everybody is absolutely crystal clear, and there's no background sound that I can hear whatsoever. But
it may be recording just fine, you know, when you play it back.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah, Steve, Brian, and I sound like the ETs. Take us to your leader.
Well, look, Brian and I are ultra-terrestrials. You didn't know that. But.
You weren't allowed to tell him, Steve.
Dan will put us all up on display on a stage. How about we just give all the listeners, you know, your, you know, schedules, what, you know, websites or whatever, and we can call it an evening and do this another time when technology is fixed.
Sounds good.
Yeah, Steve, how about, do you want to plug the Mothman Museum, your radio show?
Sure. The Mothman Museum on Main Street in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, founded by Jeff Lonsley. It's got everything, articles, displays. It covers the entire spectrum of the Mothman, and people come from all over the world to see it. And don't forget to pay tribute to the Mothman statue right next by. And my podcast is The High Strangeness Factor on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Okay, Brian, how about you?
Well, we will be at this coming Saturday from 10 to 6 at the Penn, Ohio Paranormal Conference in Hickory, Mercer County. And then we will be at the April 6th, I believe, is the MUFON conference in Pittsburgh. And then we will obviously be at Dan's conference on April 27th, and then ours will be May 4th in Brook County,
okay.
West Virginia.
Okay. And Dan, how do people find their way to Lindora and everything else about the Boru conference?
If they do a map quest, Google it, they can get driving directions. But, you know, really, depending on how they want to come, they can come up through Evans City. They can come out 79 to 422 east. It's pretty much a straight shot. If anyone needs to or wants to get a hold of me, they can email me at V as in Victor, O as in Oscar, P as in Paul, 4647 at yahoo.com. That's VOP 4647 at yahoo.com. They can instant message me via Facebook. And, you know, if they want to come to the conference and they need any more information, they can give me a call. My phone number is 724-282-1710, or again, they can reach me via Facebook or my email address. The conference is April 27th. It'll be the 17th year that we've done it, and I truly think if they come out for the day, they will not be disappointed. We have a fantastic line of guest speakers. You know, we have door prizes, raffles, book signings. We offer pretty decent, you know, food, meatball hoagies, hot dogs, any way you can imagine, pop, water, coffee, fruit, candy, you name it, but it's available so they don't have to go out. And if they're not familiar with the surrounding area, they can definitely get something at the conference. And I truly think that they'll enjoy themselves and have a great time. And, you know, we have 50 or over 50 vendors and a little bit of everything. So there's something there for everyone. And like I said, any questions, any concerns, feel free to reach out to me.
All right. That sounds like a great way to wrap up the show. I apologize for the echo of that might be storm-related from yesterday, but we'll nothing we could do about it. But I thought it was a terrific show. Thank you so much for being great guests, and look forward to seeing everyone on the 27th, you know, month from now.
So, Mark, thank you for having us. True pleasure. Steve and Brian, you guys take care. God bless to all of you, and you all have a good evening.
All right, we'll see you as well.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.